Go. All right, welcome in. Thursday edition, no Big Fudge edition, Horse Racing Happy Hour. Excited, though, because we do get to visit with a friend of the show, back for a second visit already.
Yeah,
you might know him as the Urban Handicapper. You might know him as the Sniper. I know him as Barry. He's Barry Spears. How are you, Barry, man?
Good. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me on.
No. Thanks for jumping back on. Always good to see you. Last time we spoke, you were prepping, and you did 600 podcasts the week of the Tampa Bay Derby. how did that go, man? Did you have a good time?
Oh, man, it was so much fun. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do something like that. And I think I'll have another shot at it again this year. So
beautiful.
A good time, yeah.
You know what's great? You were like, yo, you guys should have more people like me in the paddock. And they were like, okay, we'll call you Bluff. All right, let's go.
Right. They really did. That's exactly what happened. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was great. And so fun having Barry back on. We're going to talk some Cotillion, some Pennsylvania Derby, some big races. I'll tell you what, man, when Parks does it, they do it. That's a hell of a card this Saturday.
Yeah, that's a great card.
Yeah. Should be a lot of fun, those last six races, for sure. Maybe some value earlier in the card, too, which is pretty fun. But we got into Derby season last week, Barry, here at Churchill Downs. Took my boys down there to watch the Iroquois, the Pocahontas, of course, to kick off the Oaks season. Kind of a flip from what we might be used to. We got Kenny McPeak on the girls' side. We got Tom Avis on the boys' side. Funny thing, we're going to open the show with a no sound on the Curly Jack winning the Iroquois. We cannot find a replay with Travis Stone's voice over it. And wow. So let's go ahead and play that one, Zach. I know this is off of their YouTube page, but it just doesn't have any sound. So Curly Jack comes from a little bit off the pace here. Echo again and Damon's Mound go to the front like we expected them to. But those fractions, under 23 and 3, sub 48, I think were just a little bit too much for them to figure out. And then Curly Jack picks up the pieces here at the end, is going to come flying up to pick it off with I believe, who was on Curly Jack in the Iroquois? Oh, Edgar Morales, man. I wanted to talk about that a little bit, man, because Tom has really come to trust Edgar Morales. Their relationship really budded at Horseshoe Indianapolis, and now they're doing the damn thing at Churchill too, picking off a race like this. Do you make much of these early 2-year-old races, Barry, or do you just see them sort of as, hey, 10-1 on a really good horse there?
Typically I kind of discount horses that quote unquote peak too soon, like, you know, this time of year rather than after the new year. One thing I do find kind of bizarre is that they don't have a mile race for 2-year-olds like that, where, you know, that race, I thought probably should have been one turn mile. And then later on, you know, go that extra distance. There was no progression. It kind of went from, you know, 6.5 furlongs to a mile, yeah, 16th. And then that's what you saw. I think that that's a lot of what you saw with the two front runners. You know, they kind of ran that race like they were on older horses.
Yeah.
And they kind of just faded late and Curly Jack picked up the pieces. You know, a very good effort by that horse, but, you know, it's hard to know what to make of these races, especially, you know, in September. You know, yeah, rather than, you know, January or February, it becomes a little bit more clear. But, you know, I wouldn't throw anybody out of that race.
Sure.
And I also wouldn't take anybody, at least at this point.
You know, the interesting thing is, you know, we watched on the Derby Trail last year that jockey club from November was really predictive of good turnout. You know, White of Barrio comes out of that. Simplification comes out of there. We see, you know, some horses that came out of there, had that 2-turn experience, parlay it into good victories on the Derby Trail, right? And so I'm with you. I think you see more when you get to November, when you get to maybe, you know, those early February races, especially obviously once the horses are 3. But yeah, sometimes the September races, yeah, it's nice to get the win if you're the owner, but it might be in your best interest if you're the owner of one of these horses, man, get out now, right?
Because right, exactly.
It might be peaking, frankly.
Get in and get out. But yeah, you know, I think going those 2 turns and the amount of 2-turn races is really a key, especially with the 3-year-olds when they turn 3. You know, having that foundation is what gets you there. I mean, look at Epicenter last year. I mean, you can kind of, you know, I kind of throw out the fluke of Rich Strike, and Epicenter had the best foundation out of any horse, and he ran like it. Same thing with Zanin. He was. Yeah. You know, running good races long, and just came up a little bit short. But that's what you want to see going into the Derby season.
There you go. All right. So flipping over to the gals, we'll head over to the Pocahontas. I mean, no one better with 2 and 3 year old fillies than Kenny McPeak. We saw that a couple years ago with Swiss Skydiver. Here is Fun and Feisty, Julian Leopard.
Flying on the far outside to within 5 lengths of the lead as they come to the top of the stretch. Friendly Persuasion up to confront Grand Love. They shoulder to shoulder right off their turn. They press top of the stretch. They're trying to hang in there. Fun and Feisty continues to roll. And Fun and Feisty over the top and to the front. Shoplifter trying to rally down inside. Grand Love gives way with Friendly Persuasion and Boss Lady Bailey. But it's Fun and Feisty. And off the pace winner of the Pope.
So this was an interesting race to me, Barry, because you watch other horses kind of weaving down that stretch, right? And the two-year-old's going two turns for the first time. A lot of times they're trying to find their legs. They're trying to figure that out. Man, she didn't have that issue at all. She was strong. She was ready to go. A lot of times we see more consistent progressive from fillies from 2 to 3 than we do from the colts. It seems like some of the colts just develop so much later. Some of those fillies figure it out a lot earlier. Any chance that she's already figured it out?
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I thought that race was a lot more quote unquote polished than the
I thought she
the colt race. Yeah, definitely. But I think they ran into the similar situation where, you know, they kind of were ridden like they were older horses and kind of burnt out the top two. I thought Grand Love actually ran really, really well, despite, you know, what the end result was. If there's anybody that I might like out of this race, it might be that one. Fun and Feisty already has, you know, kind of look professional doing it.
She did.
So you kind of have to keep her in your thoughts going forward. But, you know, it's such a crapshoot at this time of year, because you'll see horses, I'm sure, come out of that race and just blossom. So, you know, it remains to be seen. But I think that the females at this point look like a better group.
I think it sets up for a fun Breeders' Cup in that age group for the juvenile day, right? That there's going to be, it's going to be deep in both of those races, both in the, on the Philly side and on the colt side. And so I think those will be really fun. You know, we've been talking the last couple of weeks, Barry, you know, Flightline solved one of the issues for which of the races might be the chalkiest with his performance at the Pacific Classic. I thought a couple of things had happened that had blown open that sequence in Breeders' Cup on Saturday. Malathat wins up at Saratoga. That Distaff class is wide open. Just a bunch of really classy fillies and mares in that group. And then, frankly, with Baid not coming over for Breeders' Cup, I think the turf is very open, frankly, this year. I think we're going to get a bunch of different Euro shippers. Man, Gufo's in as good a form as he's ever going to be in. Runs 2 weeks off, comes back, almost wins a Kentucky freaking Downs of all places. And so I think that, you know, so we got kind of a switch there where it might have been Baid that was going to be the horse that we were going to use on the turf and walk away. And now we got Flightline. Where are you on some of those races? Do you agree with me on, say, the Distaff fields, the turf fields?
Yeah, I mean, I think the turf is really contingent upon who comes over from Europe, because those horses have just beaten the American horses so badly in every opportunity. I mean, if it was any horse with, you know, the name Appleby attached to it in some way, shape, or form, they were going to win by open lengths. And I don't think that's changed very much. And I don't think it's going to change on Breeders' Cup Day. It's just a matter of who shows up. You know, you got horses like, you know, World Like Goddess, who's very, very nice. And, you know, I think it will be interesting. Hopefully, you know, there's another Euro that kind of flies on the radar like they did a couple years ago at Keeneland, where that horse, Order of Australia won, you know, drawing in, there was a COVID, the jockey got COVID, switched guys, this one drew in and won at a big price. That'd be nice, but, you know, we'll see what the fields look like.
Yeah, no, we actually got to be there for that Breeders' Cup, and I watched like 100 people in front of me just lose their tickets on that. And then there was one guy in front of me that had punched all 14 of them and had Order of Australia. I think he was in at the third as the, oh, was he the 15 that day or something? Cause he had drawn in or something.
My buddy Chuck, he said he was going to use all the Euros, and he missed one because it drew in from the other page. And the rest is history.
There it is. Oh man, never easy. By the way, talk about Chuck, cause I know you do a weekly show with him.
Yes. Yeah. you know, my partner, Chuck Simon. We got a podcast we do every Monday. It's called The Big Monday Show, Going in Circles Podcast. We do a little bit of writing. Chuck does some writing as far as hot topics within the industry, I'd say. But it's a lot of opinions, and we're not kind of beholden to the mass. How can I put it? we're not beholden to any sponsors or anything like that. So we can kind of say what we want to say within reason.
The cool thing too, you can kind of bookend your weekend. You can come here for a preview show, go to them for a recap show. It's really an excellent opportunity.
Works out perfect.
I think you guys do a great job. So I love having
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. And so, and Chuck is a really good writer as well. And so he did a daily blog about Saratoga this year, for example, and that's always a good read. And so, if anybody wants to check that out, Going in Circles, go check them out. Easy to find for sure. You listen to podcasts. So, all right. So I did want to ask, you know, where are we with this three-year-old class? Because it's always this time of year that we kind of get to look back and reflect, especially as we go into what I consider to be the very last of the major three-year-old races, Pennsylvania Derby, the Cotillion this weekend. Where are we with this three-year-old class? How good did it end up being? Is it not good? Do we always think it's not as good as it really is? Because I think there's a tendency in horse racing to kind of be negative about any group, frankly. You know, like if I say, oh, yeah, the distaff class is wide open, people are like, yeah, it's because they're not very classy. It's like, no, they're very classy. Get out of here, you know. So, you know, you got a horse like Epicenter, doesn't win a classic race, comes back, romps in the Traverse. You got, you know, a horse like Cyberknife, bunch of grade ones this year. Just a really good horse, has beaten pretty much anyone you put in front of him, except for Epicenter recently, right? You get Rich Strike picking off the Derby, which doesn't bother me, but seems to bother other people about the three-year-old class. It's just horse racing, people. It's going to be okay. Where are you at on this three-year-old class? We'll start on the Colts side.
I think the Colts are pretty good. You know, top to bottom, I think they're pretty good. You know, Rich Strike was kind of an aberration in the whole mix of things, but you know, it kind of highlights the class in general. They're all kind of beating each other, and makes for good racing.
Yes, it does.
And you know, when we look back, there's, you know, you obviously see like, oh, that horse never wanted to go far, right. Things like that, right. Which will shake themselves out. But they're still pretty good horses. I mean, you know, I wouldn't put this class at the top of all time, but I wouldn't definitely not put it at the bottom either. So they're right, you know, average, I would say.
I think one of the interesting things, I shouldn't say the, one of the, is that we're going to get a bunch of these guys back at four, right? And so actually we'll have an older dirt male class that's actually good. And deeper for a while, frankly, right? And so at least another year, you know, like a Zandon, you can't retire a Zandon. Do you think you can really retire a Cyberknife? I know he's a gun runner, but like, I guess if he wins the Pennsylvania Derby, maybe, right?
I would think he'd have to win the Breeders' Cup too. In order for that to happen, but even then, I mean, it seems like a horse like Cyberknife is like tailor made to go to the Pegasus.
Right, that's so true, actually. Yeah, and then you got these other horses that are next tier down. You get like a Tawny Port wins the Ohio Derby, right? You've got a Taba who we kind of don't know what he is because of all the crap that went on in California this year. Simplification's a nice horse, man. I know you've seen
always
him, right?
Been.
And
yeah,
he's a nice horse, and he's going to run for a while because he's a not this time. And I think that, you know, we'll get him for a little while. And so, you know, just this, I mean, is how good is White of Barrio? I don't think that's a $40,000 purchase. That's a race day colt. I don't think he's going to the breeding shed this fall. So we're going to get
he'll be like
a Florida specialist or something, but at least we get to see him next year.
Right. Yeah. I don't see anybody, you know, tearing down the barn and saying, oh, when are those White of Barrio babies coming? But he, you know, he had his time. He ran really good in the spring and, you know, tailed off a little bit. If he can bounce back, he's just as good as anybody on his best day.
No, that's right. Yeah. I mean, even getting like a Skippy Longstocking wins in the slop in the West Virginia Derby. So he's a great stakes winner, puts up a 102 buyer in that one. So, I mean, it's a nice group. I haven't even mentioned like We the People who romped at Belmont and, you know, honestly, I mean, with this field on Saturday, maybe you disagree, but like a We the People, man, that's a horse to me that if he's on his form, man, he goes out front with Flavian, stays out front. I wouldn't be shocked.
No way.
It would be an upset, but it wouldn't shock me.
Right. Exactly. He's fast enough to win. There's not a whole heck of a lot of speed in that race. So Why not? If you like them, go ahead. You know, especially there's worse horses to pick. And you're probably, that's what, right? The other thing. I was like, you're probably going to get close to 10 to 1.
Yeah.
If not so over that.
You get Flavian at 10 to 1, man. That sounds like a deal to me. So, all right. So let's.
Yeah, let's. We're totally frozen. So,
am I there?
There you go.
I'm back. All right, there we go. This happens Louis once an back. Episode, Barry. I'm sorry. There we go.
At least all right.
You know, I think there's a very, very top creme de la creme with the top of the Philly class at the three-year-olds. And then you've got a bunch of others. You've got a nest at the top. You've got, you know, a couple of those Phillies running this weekend in the Cotillion, maybe a Secret Oath. I don't know that we know how good Adair Manor is, right? You know, an Interstate Daydream picks off the Black-Eyed Susan, comes back, runs in the Indiana Oaks, that kind of thing. I think less deep of a three-year-old Phillies class than we've had the last couple of years, but still very good at the top.
Oh, yeah, very, very good at the top. You know, Nest, she just came into her own, you know. I saw her run in a comeback race at Tampa, and she was just – you could tell she just stood out. She was just better than what she was running against. And, you know, Secret Oath had a great campaign run against boys in the Arkansas Derby. I mean, like you said, it's very top heavy, but the others aren't that far behind, you know? So that's why the Breeders' Cup is going to be very interesting for them, because, you know, the good ones or the ones near the top have actually had a pretty good campaign, better than I would normally think in a year. Usually they don't run this much, but they've been knocking heads. They've been going against each other, which is another good thing. So, you know, hopefully we can get a new shooter in there and grab a price.
Yeah, for sure. No, even a slightly off the board horse, maybe a Goddess of Fire continues her good form. You know, jumps up.
She just doesn't like to win. That's the only thing.
It's so strange, right? Yeah, maybe Johnny can get her to figure it out. You know, Irad's on an interesting horse in Green Up. She's been running at Parks, right? Going the two turns. Can she stretch out just a little bit? Be a little bit faster? I don't know against this company, probably not. But like I said, I mean, like in a Adair Manor, you know, I mean, it's hard to know. You know, especially, I mean, Uncle Mo babies, they can do anything they want. But, you know, as Bob Baffert got her training the right way, she's certainly following that classic sort of Baffert pattern of the 5-6, 5-6. And in her case, she went 5-7 for a long workout the other day at Del Mar, a bullet the other day at Santa Anita. So she'll be ready to go. It's just an interesting class. I think, you know, like I said, at the very top, very good. Once you get into the middle of it, little less than I think we've been used to. Actually, we've been kind of spoiled. I was thinking about it. We've been spoiled with the Phillies like recently, man. Like that Distaff class is just good for that reason. But in the same vein, again, like the three-year-old Colt side, I think the three-year-old Philly side, we're gonna see a lot of them as 4 and 5 year olds, which is fun.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. I mean, that's what as horse players we've been clamoring for right. a while. You know, yeah. Everybody would run, you know, 6-7 times as a three-year-old and then retire, right. and it kind of gets old. So. You know, having these horses stick around is what the sport needs. You know, some name recognition behind everything goes a long way.
And the cool thing, too, happens, you know, they get to 4 and they go, okay, Adair Manor, maybe she's better at 7 furlongs. We see her turn into a sprinter and she's great at that. And, you know, like a, you know, Secret Oath stays at 2 turns, that kind of thing. Maybe a Shahama who's a deep closer figures out.
I actually like her.
I do, too.
I like her on Saturday.
Yeah. Came back, won the Monmouth Oaks last time out. And so see if she can. Continue that form, but let's get into this card, man. And okay. We tell you every week on this show, we are beholden to a sponsor. Their name is Green Sheet Racing, greensheetracing.com. Go check out the sheet. You can see my pick 5 for this sequence in there every Saturday. We go to a different track. We check out all the biggest races. Cool thing, and Barry will tell you this, usually don't play the pick 5 at Parks. It is a jackpot pick 5. Try to stay away from those jackpot days until it's mandatory payout, and that is Saturday. So go ahead and play that pick 5 this Saturday. There's over 100K carryover in there already, so they're putting money in there for you, which is that's very nice. So yeah, and that boosted, even if it goes a little chalky on us, we probably get a good payout on that. And so that starts in the ninth race, and the ninth race this weekend is the Turf Monster. It's a grade 3, 5 furlongs on the turf for 3-year-olds and up 300K in the pool here. I mean, like I said, Barry, $2.8 million in these last 5 races at Parks. They're doing the damn thing on Saturday, so that'll be a lot of fun. I thought this one was either or race. You either have to go real skinny here and take a chance, or this is one of your spread races?
It is funny. I actually went right in between that a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You know, the horse that I would single in this race would be That's Right, yeah. The one horse. But I just don't think that horse wants anybody next to her.
I think the rail's tough.
Or to him, yeah. Yep. Well, the rail's okay, because the horse is fast enough to get out. But if you look at the past performances on July 17th, June 17th, and May 20th, easy leads. Right. And one going away by five twice, and then by three lengths the third time. Anytime this horse gets headed or somebody's really close, tends to fold up like a lawn chair. So I'm going to go with the lawn chair on Saturday. and I'm just going to not use that horse at all. I ended up liking the 4-0 better. And number five, Uncle Ernie, who doesn't have a start on the turf. But I thought it was kind of strange, which strange in a good way, that Joel Rosario ends up here for John Service, who's, you know, a career 20%+ trainer. He knows what he's doing.
Yes.
He's getting us this horse.
This isn't
the
an accident.
The first time.
The turf for this horse,
right.
Sir. Yep.
And he gets top rider. So,
yep.
I'm going to have to throw that one in there, too.
You and I landed on the same two here. That's awesome. Nothing better. What really stood out to me, Barry, is that this is an every other type, right? And this is the every other. Tried him at a mile last time. Didn't like the mile. Bringing him back to the 5.5 furlongs. Has loved that two of the last three times that he ran at that kind of distance. Frankly, his one loss in that group was at 5 furlongs over Good Go at Monmouth. We're going to be good and firm by the time we get to Saturday at Parks. Only lost by 2 that day anyway. I think at that distance, nothing better. I actually have that horse on top. Totally agree about Uncle Ernie, and for many of the same reasons. John Service's numbers, dirt to turf, not great, but I don't think this one's an accident. This feels like he knows something about this horse, bringing in Joel, especially the two of them gonna pair up here for the first time in a very long time, frankly. I'm with you. I think the 4 and 5 are definite plays.
This is like a prime spot to do something like that, because this field isn't all that great.
Right.
For what's deemed to be a grade
three.
Graded.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. You got
a serious
horses
purse too.
Yeah. And honestly, behind, let's say the 1 and probably the 4, there's not really much in here. Even the outside horses, they don't look all that intimidating. Or, you know, why not take a shot with a horse who hasn't run on the turf before that could theoretically run? The horse is definitely fast enough. If this was on dirt, this horse would probably be, you know, second, third choice.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that horse rates a big shot, especially if he can get out.
Something, you know, I really like is Andy Hernandez is staying on That's Right here. And young jockey, Michael Moore sticking with him. Everyone's in town. He could have tried to get in touch with an agent and get someone else on this horse. And he said, no. The best jockey for this horse is the one that's been on him. And I always appreciate those kinds of things.
Yeah.
When a trainer says, no, this is my guy. I'm sticking with Andy Hernandez. And the two of them, by the way, he is at Parks 25% together the last 63 times out. And so obviously they've got something going there as well. The Gallant Bob is the next race in this sequence. It is a grade two. It's over the dirt course, 6 furlongs for 3-year-olds, $300,000. It's a grade two, like I mentioned here. I feel like this year, Barry, and maybe it's just because I haven't been paying attention, there are a lot of 3-year-old sprint races that are graded.
Too many, to be honest with you.
I'm with you, yeah. And I'm not sure. Do you think this is a grade two field?
No.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you on that as well. It's a grade three minus to me, but they're going to get G2 money. Did you land on anybody here?
No, this is definitely a spread race for me.
I agree with you.
I one thing I did know is I didn't want any part of Provocateur, even though, you know, this horse has beaten a few of these. Just nothing to grab onto there. I just, if this is the big stage, I'm not sure Provocateur really wants to be in the spotlight. And, you know, there's a few alternatives here, one of which is the 8 Witty.
Nice.
And if you take out that horse's August 23rd race at 1/16 and the June 3rd race at Penn at 1 mile on the turf, which
soft turf,
right? Soft turf, too, yeah, right, yeah. Which he lost by 34 lengths that day, and then on August 23rd loses by 13 and finished seventh both times. If you take those out of the PPs and you just look at those races that are left, this horse stacks up with anybody in here.
Yeah, and you get a huge price on him too, at 12-1.
Right? Right, because of the connections, everything else, this horse is going to be, you know, quite a big price or bigger than the morning line. Another one that I liked a little bit is Lightning Larry.
Yeah,
he's been keeping pretty good company, even up to the point where he won the Chick Lang back in May. Give him a pass for the last one. It was the comebacker. Seems to be training forwardly. There's a bullet there at a Monmouth on the 17th of September. So all systems are go. 8-1 morning line seems a little bit high.
I agree with you.
But, you know, I'll still take 5-1.
Yeah, especially with a Jorge Delgado. I mean, like that guy on the East Coast, I mean, get going. I do like the 11 Nakatomi here. It is 9-2. We get Joel, though. Wesley Ward, this horse, they tried it, ask it, actually, comes back, runs and wins in the Saratoga Special, first time back, give the horse a bunch of time off, wins first time out at Churchill, over the dirt. And so maybe they figured it out with this horse. It's been training at Keeneland, recently over 5 furlongs. Wesley Ward brings his horses back off of a layoff like this at 25%. So I really like the angle there. I went to the outside as well, 5-1 on Scaramouche. That's John Velasquez and Guadalupe Preciado. Horse is a local runner. In these cases, Barry, sometimes I just look at the times, runs last time, wins, open lengths, 1:10 and 6 furlongs, excuse me, is a winning time, right? That just is.
Yeah.
If you can run 1:10 in that spot, the horse was in the 4 hole coming out of the 6, is going to be able to break from the outside and not have to deal with traffic that way. And so if the horse can break well and get there, I think the 14's a problem. And then I also, I like the 8 in this race. I think you mentioned already, Witty. So Carol Cedeno, if people don't know, is a multiple graded stakes placed jockey, has made over $1.4 million this year in purses. So this isn't, you know, sometimes you have to dig when you get to these tracks that you don't frequent all the time. You might not be a parks player, but you got to get into people that have paid their dues here. 21% already at this meeting. The two of them hitting 2 out of 3 so far at this meet, which is pretty fun at parks. 40% overall when they do hook up. And so I'm with you, man. I think Witty's a huge play here. And I love the Lightning Larry angle there. I think you're totally right about that. Give the horse a little bit of time off. Jorge Delgado does that as well as anyone at 24%. And so
about
Chantel Sutherland coming in for this one as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She rode that horse really well. And yep. I mean,
the Chick Lang's that's a serious race.
That's a tough race. It was a tough race this year, too, yep. Because I think Lightning Larry was like 6-1.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It was 12-1. Sorry.
Yeah, 12-1. Excuse me.
Better. Yeah, I was. You know how I remember that race because I picked that horse for the Chick Lang.
Nice.
And I was at Epcot that day. I was at Epcot on Preakness Day. It was my daughter's birthday.
There you go.
So we were hanging out, and I was trying to catch signal so I could watch the race while we were in line for Ratatouille. So. what can I say? But the 11. Nakatomi.
Yeah.
The only thing I actually like this horse, but the only thing that kind of scares me a little bit is if you look, he's only run 6 times.
Yeah, no, for sure.
4 of those times, tad slow, step slow, slow start, dwelt.
Can't do that in this field. You're right. Can't do that in this field.
That's my only apprehension about that horse. But you know, when the horse starts running, he starts running.
Right.
I mean,
and like we mentioned,
no slouch.
This is not a grade 2 field. And so, you know, if he can get it going, if he gets running, he'll be fine. So
exactly.
I'm with you, man. All right. So the grade 1 Cotillion is the next race. It's race 11. Starts the late pick 3 here. If you are out of your pick 5 by that point, 1/16 on the dirt, obviously for 3-year-old fillies. $1 million on the line here. I am a big fan of when the filly races get the same purses as the colt races. So it's good to see that here at Parks. Like, big fan because, frankly, the fillies and mares make our sport when they get older. So good to spotlight them when they're 3 years old. Major players shipping in for this one, obviously, for the purse. Adair Manor comes in from California. We get Goddess of Fire down from New York. Jerry Manders coming in, of course, out of the New York circuit, won the Mother Goose earlier this year at the distance. Secret Oath coming in. Obviously, Secret Oath was your Kentucky Oaks winner this year. Huge field here, Barry. Very fun. Probably our last really good 3-year-old filly race over 2 turns this year. Did you land on one horse here or did you land on several?
Honestly, I thought it was a 2-horse race. It was seems like a Derry Manor I like quite a bit here. If I was going to single horse, that's who I would.
Okay.
But Secret Oath is right there. I mean, they stood out to me by far. And then, you know, the horse that I might throw in, like on a couple of combinations of tickets, along with the two, would be the 7 Shahama.
Yeah, okay.
I think that horse has some potential here, really close to kind of breaking through. And I think that this might be the race to do it.
Shahama's also really fast, like really fast.
That helps.
It does help for sure. And if people don't know, she started her career in the Arabian Peninsula. She was your UAE Oaks winner, 4 winners over there in the UAE at Maidan. Comes over here and immediately runs into Kentucky Oaks. Not a bad finish, frankly, considering the conditions this year over that wet, fast surface. Comes back at the Mother Goose, is right there, finishes second by 3 lengths. Wins again in the Monmouth Oaks. With you, that might be the off-the-board play here. There's a chance that Flavian Pratt ruins a bunch of tickets this weekend because he's on some horses that are in some interesting spots. But you're right, because 141 over a mile and a 16th, that can win this race this weekend.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, one thing I could make a downgrade on Secret Oath and just kind of saying that she might be a little worn out. But
right,
she got beat by Nest in open lengths twice. You know, and beat everybody else pretty easily.
Exactly, right.
So you can't really, you know, counter out the coach. You know, he runs his horses, which I like.
Yeah, and Nest is not in this race. And he did give her a little bit over a month off here, actually, between races here. So maybe she will be ready to go. I landed on 6-2 as well. I'm with you. There's something about Adair Manor that I can't quite put my finger on, but I think that she's going to run a big race. And so
fast.
She's so fast, man.
It's like super fast.
Yeah, that's why I wonder if eventually she doesn't become a one-turn mile or 7 furlong kind of horse because she breaks so well. She's comfortable out near the lead, and so it'll be interesting to see if that's where they go with her. But she's got that Uncle Mo breeding, so the 2 turns make sense, and that's why I'm not a horse trainer. All right, so Pennsylvania Derby time. $1 million on the line here for 3-year-olds, 1 1/8 on the dirt. This is a Grade 1, and frankly, I think one of the very best 3-year-old colt fields we've had this year. I think this is a very fun race. A bunch of horses that have shown that they are absolutely top notch. We've got 4 horses with 100+ buyer figures on this race. Barry, where did we land in the Pennsylvania Derby? Is it chalky? Is there a long shot here? What do you think?
Yeah, it looks a little bit chalky.
A little chalky.
I think Tabo is probably the best horse in the race. And I think Cyberknife is probably the second best horse in this race. Although I like Cyberknife a little bit better only because, you know, he kind of showed a little bit of a better dimension, I thought, in the Haskell.
Yes.
Even though he didn't go to that tactic in the Travers, I still think he's grown up a little bit. And he's come into his own, and I think this is a perfect spot for him. Same thing with Taba. He probably just needs racing. That's really his only, you know, the only knock against him is he hasn't really run all that much. He's run 4 times, run 3 of those 4 were 100+ buyers. So, yep. I mean, he obviously can run. And may not even need to be that good in order to beat this field.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm always fascinated by horses like Cyberknife because we watch them do it over and over again, yet we seem to have questions about them. I don't know. I can't think top of my head about another horse that kept doing that. But it was, you know, where you hear.
He really hasn't run a bad race. I mean, if you look at it.
He doesn't run bad races. That's right.
His LeCompte was, like, out of nowhere, just crazy. And it was of a second time he had blinkers. I don't know what they were trying to pull. But
he doesn't need
them. And then the other time was the Derby. I mean, you could always forget the Derby. It's a mess.
That's right.
Like if you're not up in the front, it's just a nightmare. And then he's come out of the Derby and ran great.
Yeah. Whitmore ran dead last in the Derby. That horse is fine.
Right.
It's okay.
Exactly.
You'll be okay. I've sent one to you, but that cup that shows all the last place finishers in the Derby, some damn fine horses on that cup.
Yeah.
So, yes, right. Yeah, so gotta let those go sometimes. Just draw a line through the Derby. I'm with you. I think it's very short for me on my tickets. I'm going 8-5 on the tickets. I do think, though, because I'm not sure there's going to be a ton of pace, if Flavian can get We the People rated properly, high 20, like 23-4, 47-4, that kind of thing, I think there's small inkling.
Tough read. Yeah, he's a tough read.
Tough rate, though. You're right. It's a tough rate.
Because, you know, he's on paper going to be the speed.
Yep.
And they're not really going to be going fast, but he didn't really go all that fast in the West Virginia Derby, and he got beat.
The problem for him is that Taba's in this race, and Taba will sit right on his hip, and that's the issue.
And not go away.
Correct. That's right. That's exactly it, yes. And so,
Actually, I thought this race had a real upside for vertical bets. The horse Naval Aviator, I thought, was really interesting at a price. He's actually, you know, I don't think there's any way that horse can win. It has to really be like be a super mad scramble up front. They go, you know, 44, 110.
Right.
That'll win. I mean, I guess it's possible if Rich Strike can get those kind of fractions.
That's
but,
right. Yeah. yeah.
Barring that happen, I don't think Naval Aviator is going to be on, you know, a threat to win. But I do think this horse can hit the board at a price. And I know this horse is going to be a big price.
But I mean, you know, I think we could go through this race, and if I said, "Hey, simplification hits the board," we'd be like, "Yeah, sure."
I actually, you know, on a deeper ticket, I'm going to use We the People and simplification for sure.
Yeah, I'm on this show at least. We are we're big fans of Antonio Sano. We think he's a really really interesting guy, and so it would be great if he could pick one of these off. Simplification, by the way, is the only horse in this field with a +100/+100 early late time form speed figure. So that horse can run early. He can run late. He's capable of doing it all. So look for him. I think he hits the board here, even at 10-1. I think he's an interesting spot here. Most interested in a horse like Tawny Port, because once in a while in Kentucky, we just have to say, I'm betting the other Brad Cox. In the, you know, like on the East Coast, I'm betting the other Chad Brown, you know. And so it's it'll be interesting to see how his horses come in. But I was there the other day when Cyberknife worked at Churchill, and that is the easiest 101 that I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he was jogging. So if he's in that kind of form, I think he'll be okay on Saturday as well. So,
okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Little eyes on the horses. There you go.
There you go.
On the ground journalism. There you go.
And Louis the last on race, the street.
Last race of the day. I love that this is the last one. This is a state bred handicap called the Alphabet Soup Handicap. By the way, horse racing undefeated in stakes race names. Alphabet Soup is a terrific name for a race. It really is. Mile and a 16th. We're going to get back on the turf here. Four Pennsylvania breds, three and up, 200K on the line here. Barry, I am a believer that if you see a horse carrying more weight than other horses, that's the best horse in the race. What say you about the Alphabet Soup Handicap?
I'm with you. I mean, if I'm going to single a horse, it's going to be the one.
Yeah. He's tough, right? Especially dropping back into state bred company.
That's the key. You know, he dominated state breds back in June at Penn. This field isn't much different than that one. Top to bottom, I think it's pretty much kind of like the same field. And he dominated that one. There's no reason he can't dominate on Saturday.
Yeah, I think the only other ones you look at here are the 6 and 7 who have finished together. Midnight Hauler is the 6. And You Must Chill is the 7. I'm always interested, though. An interesting angle to watch with these kinds of races is of the guys who come in from out of state, who sticks around for the last race?
Right. I see Irad on the 3, and with John Service, another horse that really doesn't run on turf.
Right.
And all I can see in my head, all I can see is Irad getting to the lead and wiring this field at a decent price. And that would hurt my feelings badly.
But you wouldn't be shocked by it, of course.
No, but it wouldn't. Right. I already had it mapped out in my head. So
yeah, and Florent Giroux sticks around for Stonegate, the 2, right? I mean, once in a while you see these little things at the end. I'm sure the local jocks are like, come on, man, let me get the 200K race. Get out of here. Paco Lopez is on the 8 CRISPR. I don't think of Paco Lopez as being non-local for Parks or Monmouth or whatever. He runs a lot there, but yeah, it's an interesting race. I'm with you by Land and Sea, the one I think is easily the class here. Runs at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, etc. against open company, comes back to state-bred at Penn over a crappy go. I'm shocked they ran that race on grass, by the way. Wins by 6 3/4 lengths. So it should be interesting. The only interesting thing is Flavian didn't jump back on this horse for this race. Kind of expected to see him at the end of the day. But Sanchez and Guadalupe Preciado hitting together at 23% at Park. So that's probably a good reason to have him on the mount here. So my pick five, by the way, is $72 for this sequence with $100K guaranteed. I think there'd be a nice return on about a $72 sequence here. And so Barry, any other parting shots here for us as we get, I mean, we're getting into the mud of the season because before Breeders' Cup, there's a reason everyone loves Keeneland, by the way, is because they're like, oh, it's Keeneland. It's pretty. And the racing's not great, but hey, it's something, right? Hey.
See, I've never been to Keeneland. I got to go so I can experience it. Everybody tells me it's fantastic and it looks like it on TV. So I gotta try that out.
So our buddy, John from Green Sheet wanted to know, he's like, so Barry's coming on. That's great. Florida guy, right? See, he's a Florida guy. He said, what's his home track? And I was like, I don't know what Barry calls his home track.
You know, it's crazy because I'm almost directly equidistant from each.
Right.
So where I live, there's just a dog track that is all grown in and it's grass now, but it's still an OTB, and a poker room. But Tampa is 2 hours away from me and Gulfstream is 3 hours away.
Okay.
Just in different directions.
Yeah. So championship meet at Gulfstream, then you head down to Tampa for their meet, right?
I do it all the time.
There it is, baby.
All winter long.
When you're in Louisville, it's easy, right? It's Churchill. What are we doing?
Right.
If you live in Lexington, it's Keeneland. It's easy, you know? And so I think the only spot, my favorite thing of when people talk about their home tracks, Bear, is that they, like the Long Island guys, all of them are like, oh, Belmont. And they act like Aqueduct doesn't exist. But you know those dudes are at Aqueduct like 30 times during that meet. Of course
they are.
What are we doing? I mean,
they're horse players.
Yeah, exactly. What are we doing?
That's what
you're down
they
there.
Do.
You're smoking menthols. You're drinking terrible light beer. Like, yeah, we know what you're doing. Get out of here. Yeah. So it's awesome. But where are you on the Belmont at Aqueduct meet? Should they have just called it Aqueduct?
Of course, it's just Aqueduct. Like nobody cares. I guess it's a marketing thing and you know, they did a little market research to say that if it was still Belmont it would handle higher. And it may be true. I mean, subconsciously, who knows, but
is it true that it messed with the past performances that they're like not counting Aqueduct runs for horses that are running at Aqueduct?
I know that happened with the Brisnet ones.
Oh no.
The DRF had it the right way where it was just Aqueduct. It just had the BAQ.
Got it. BAQ.
Yeah, that's awful.
Print the t-shirt. Sell me a BAQ t-shirt. Oh,
they need to because, you know, they got rid of the inner dirt, and now they have Belmont and Aqueduct. We need a shirt for that, too.
How long till they put a poly track at Belmont, you think?
Within 5 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. They got the space, right? That's the difference. Like, those New York tracks are so huge. They got so much space. I think.
Well, the plan is to get rid of Aqueduct and run at Belmont and then just Belmont and Saratoga. But they need a different surface for that.
For the January, February sort of thing. Yeah, right.
For the winter time.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons. I mean, I don't know if you play it, but I mean, I think it's why Turfway is so interesting up here because, you know, it allows that winter racing. And I think it's.
Love,
I think
Turfway.
I'm with you, man. I think it's a really
fun. Love it. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I think
can't wait.
It's a fair product. I think they do a great job, and I mean the field sizes they get. I mean, and frankly, I mean I've heard rumors the maidens are going up to 70 this year. I was talking with a trainer the other day who has been going to Louisiana for years. Isn't going this year. Is just going to stay here. His kids don't have to move. I mean that kind of stuff. I don't blame them. I mean if the money's there, they run 4 days a week, man. Well, what are we doing? I mean, and frankly, on that surface, you can run your horses back in 2 weeks. I mean, it's awesome. So it's the best. I'm glad.
Yeah,
that that's
I saw the
happening.
New clubhouse and everything. The new grandstand looks really nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful for sure. And you know, people are complaining because the OTB room isn't very big. That's not why I go to the track.
No, typically not.
I don't go to the OTB room. I go to the track.
There's only so many TVs you can fit in one room.
Yeah, right. I mean, the Aristides room at Churchill Downs is really nice. I'm never in there. Like, that's not why I go to the track. But anyways, all right. Well, I'll let you get out of here, man. Any parting shots? Go ahead and pub the podcast one more time.
Yeah, yeah. The Going in Circles podcast, Big Monday, every Monday. Myself, Chuck Simon. You see my Twitter handle at Urban Handicapper, URBN Handicapper. See me there all day, every day.
There you go. And I have to applaud Barry because I think that he's done a really great job of being unapologetic about who it is that should be involved in horse racing, especially in shows like this.
My man.
No, and I mean it because when you go to Churchill, you know, Barry, we were talking about this the other day. I was there with my kids on Saturday and they're redoing the paddock. Mm-hmm. And I hate to use a word like segregate, but they're segregating the paddock at Churchill Downs.
Oh, yeah. I see what the plan for it.
And one of the best things about being at the paddock at Churchill Downs is there's the owner and then the 50-year-old plumber and then the Ford
Everybody's
worker
together.
And then me and then someone else, and then we're all just hanging out in the same spot. We're all chatting and we all have the same knowledge about horses and we're all doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think you do a good job of making sure that people are aware that the fans of the sport don't necessarily look like the people on TV about the sport. So,
yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's good. It's good that people notice. And that's really all, you know, if you see it and you're like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Right.
Next step is to do something about it.
No, that's right. We've done a good job of mm-hmm. spotlighting the women who are good in this sport.
Yes, absolutely.
It's time that we keep spotlighting other people as well. So, all right. Well, his name is Barry. He is the Urban Handicapper. He is the sniper. We told the sniper story last time. So if you didn't follow us last spring, shame on you. We'll do it next time, but we'll get out of here. Zach, go ahead and play that outro music for us. This has been the Horse Racing Happy Hour. Big Fudge back in the saddle. Stu, Barry, appreciate you. Have a good night.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time. Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time.